Dan for Catalog and Cocktails, your honest, no BS, non-salesy conversation about enterprise data with tasty beverages. I'm Tim Gasper, joined by Juan Cicada. Hey, Juan.
Tim, how are you doing, man?
Doing very well.
Well, it is always a pleasure to be in people's ears and minds and heads and stuff to be listening to us about talking about data. And today we have, I love when we can actually have a guest that we meet, we kind of, you see them on LinkedIn and then you get to meet them in person and then we get them on the podcast. And that is Thais Cook, who is a senior healthcare data analyst. We met at Data Day Texas, where you gave a talk called The Human Layer of Data. It's awesome to have you on the podcast. How are you doing, Thais?
Good, good. Thank you so much for having me over.
Awesome.
Well, let's kick it off. What are we drinking and what are we toasting for today? Or what is your favorite beverage of choice? Yeah. I know we are pre-recording this episode, so it is.
You mentioned that you don't drink very often, but when you do, you have sort of a go-to.
Yes, yes. When I drink, I go for espresso martinis. That's my thing, but I don't drink that often.
No.
Yeah.
And so we're recording this in our office, and they have a beer in the office. And they actually have a beer, which I drank. Well, I used to drink when I was in college.
Yeah, so when I first moved to Austin for the first time, it was like the one beer I tried here. I was like,
it's a Ziegenbach.
Ziegenbach, yeah.
It's a Bach. It's good. Actually, reminds me of being in school 20 years ago.
It's okay.
Anyway, so what do you want to toast for? What do you want to cheers to?
I don't know. Let's cheer to. Good question.
It's just a good question.
I don't know. I'm blanking right now.
Well, cheers to having good questions. I like
having good questions. That's it. My drink is water.
That's going to be some of our theme today.
All right. Well, so honest, no BS. Like, you come in from a very fascinating, different world into data. You come from the dental world. Tell us a little bit about where you're coming from, why you got into data, because I think your soapbox here is that the data professionals are not problem solvers, right? They're problem solvers, not just technical specialists. And I'd love to learn how you got into this whole space of data. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, sure. So I got into data almost by accident. So I was practicing. I'm a dentist in my country. I'm from Brazil. I'm a dentist there. Came to the US, ended up in dental hygiene. And I just got extremely burned out in that field for many different reasons, not going to get into details. But one of the things that I noticed is that in dentistry, there were a lot of problems that could be solved by, you know, processes and, you know, data itself, like just gathering data and everything and things like that. But anyways, got completely burned out. And then when COVID hit, that was the last straw. I said, I can't do this anymore. I was doing that for like 10, 11 years. I said, that's it. I'm out. And didn't really know what to do at that point. Just took a step back. And I said, it was almost by accident because a friend of mine, I was talking to her saying, oh, no, I'm not working anymore. I'm trying to do a career change. Don't know exactly what to do. And she said, listen, I work for a dental lab. And we need somebody to, at this point, to just enter data. She said, I need somebody to enter data who knows the terminology, knows what is a crown, what is implant, and all of that, and enter that into our system. Do you want to, something you interest? I said, yeah, sure. Why not? Not doing anything anyways, extra money. So start doing that. And it was, you know, very basic, you know, Excel spreadsheet, entering data, very, you know. And with time, and I say I'm a little bit of a geek, so I start noticing patterns on the data. And I start noticing, wow, we're having so many implants this month. Or, wow, you know, I haven't seen this office in such a long time. I wonder what happened. Or this doctor is now sending us all those cases. So I start, you know, wheels start going to my brain. And then I'm like, you know what? Literally went on Google. This is pre-AI, okay, by the way. So literally went to Google and put how to analyze data. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no clue. And one thing led to the next. I start looking into YouTube tutorials. I look into Alex the Analyst, that is, you know, data analyst, also did a transition from healthcare into data. And I didn't know that was possible. I'm like, okay, what are the skills that I need? And one of the things that he stressed was SQL. You have to know SQL. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to try learning the SQL thing. And if it is something that clicks, I'm going to pursue that. If not, if it goes completely over my head, I know this is not for me. I said that when I wrote Select Star, I fell in love with it from that moment. I said, oh my God, I can do all of this with my data. I just thought it was amazing. I said, this is awesome. So you start learning SQL, getting better at that. You start learning Tableau, Power BI, visualization tools, all of that. And got the data that I was entering and start analyzing that with all of that, and then go to my manager, who was my friend, like I said, and say, hey, I have been playing around with the data. Is this something that you think is helpful? And she looked at that, she said, how did you learn how to do this? And I told her what I was up to, and she said, yes, please, we need more of this. I need to know which offices are ordering the most from us, which ones haven't been ordering in a while. And like, she came with all those questions. And then I kind of sort of became a data analyst on the spot for the company. But it was a super small company. It wasn't, you know, big enterprise data. We didn't even have a data warehouse, just to, you know, give an idea. Mm-hmm. But I started to, you know, do that. And after a while, I thought, you know what, I need to go to a bigger company where there's a data team, there's more support, more tools. And then I ended up, I'm now in behavioral health, which is slightly different than the industry, but similar problems with healthcare. So, yeah, so that's my story.
Okay, I got a lot of things to unpack here. This is really cool. I really appreciate, first of all, how you share this story, yeah, because I'm sure a lot of people listening too are probably have gone through something similar to that, or probably even interested in going through this.
Or they're, how do I get started?
How to get started. Yeah. And also probably people are like, oh, I have people like you on our teams, and kind of realize that there's a lot of like superpowers you have in here. So, so many things in my mind. First thing comes up is, how much do you think that kind of your the success of you starting out was connected because you started doing data with respect to an area that you have expertise in, subject matter expertise, which was in dentistry, right? And because I bring that up because a lot of people say, okay, you have data expertise, technical expertise, mm-hmm, but you also have the subject matter expertise, and you come, mm-hmm, from the subject matter expertise and get into the data. And like, mm-hmm, how much of that was like, that is, if you think about it, coming from the subject matter expertise to the technical side versus the other way around, that people are coming, mm-hmm, from the technical side to the subject matter expertise. It's like, I see that was, how much of that do you think was made you, that was a superpower for you?
It definitely is. And I felt the difference because when I was doing this data analysis, when it was related to dentistry, to notice those patterns, because I have been in dental offices for 11 years, I knew how those offices operate. I knew, you know, the ins and outs of it. So it was much easier for me to visualize those patterns and see what was happening and kind of test, okay, maybe this is the story that it is trying to tell me, but maybe it's this other one, because I've been there, I've been on the field. And now that I work in behavioral health, now I'm more used to, because I have been working with this for what, 3 years now. But I felt a difference, definitely, because it's healthcare, but behavioral health is different than dentistry. So I've never worked with behavioral health before. Similar problems, but there were certain terminologies, certain things that I'm, okay, how do you discharge a patient from a hospital, for instance? I didn't know. I had to ask, you know, and I could tell that if I was a nurse and I knew exactly the process, it would make much more sense.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So yeah, you felt like that as you, well, whether you had the knowledge or you could quickly, mm-hmm, acquire the knowledge, mm-hmm, how would you say it helped the most? Was it like understanding how you could do the analysis? Was it more you could go faster? Was it kind of all of the above?
Yeah, both. I think both. I mean, don't get me wrong, the technical skills are extremely important. That's how we do things. So, mm-hmm, you know, I'm not going to knock down and say, oh, you don't need to know technical skills. You have to, of course. That's how we, you know, build stuff. But to know exactly what to build and which problems to solve, to have that background, I would say it's different if you just sit and you learn in theory what the background is, and if you're actually on the field doing that work. I could tell the difference between both.
The other thing, which is that caught my attention is that you started in a smaller place.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And basically, like, you're just doing things in spreadsheets and there's no data warehouse and stuff. And then when you do the work, right, you're showing immediate value to the owner of the place or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, you can do this, then I need this and this and this. So they're immediately telling you exactly what they need and why they need that. And I think that is kind of gives you that opportunity to really understand the impact of the analysis that you're doing. And comparing that to some, like if people are in a large organization, they may get lost around that stuff. And I think that's a really fascinating perspective of how somebody wants to enter the field. Maybe starting at a smaller place is a way to go do this, where you can actually make a bigger and faster impact. I don't know.
I think so, because you're closer to the business, you're closer to what the problems are. It's easier for you to, it's not, let's say if where I was, there was not this crazy amount of teams, there were just one, two teams, you can pull them aside and say, hey, let's meet and see how we can get this done. And when you're in a big organization that there's so many dependencies and one team depends on the other, it's much more complex for sure, 100%. So for starters, yeah, I think you can see the impact more in smaller companies.
All right. So then let's dive into the whole problem solvers and not just technical specialists. Mm-hmm. Expand on that. So what do you say data professionals are problem solvers, not just
technical specialists.
So expand on this more.
Yes, I felt that because by my own experience, when I started working with data, I mean, I like coding. I love it. I think it's cool to do it. And for a while, I was very much hung on that. Like, oh, look what I can do with SQL. Look what I can do with Python. And I got so hung on that. And I think it was like probably my first year working in data. And then I realized that I was so much intense in that I was forgetting the problems that I actually need to solve. I was, you know, going so much in the direction of all this coolness things you do. But then when I would show the results, they, okay, that's great, but now what? This doesn't answer my question. So I'm like, yes. So that was like a really, you know, hard reality that I'm like, oh, okay, it's cool to do this. And all. Like I said, not knocking down technical skills, need to know that, but always tie back to the so what? Why am I doing this in first place? What do the business want to know?
And so when it comes to the problem solving, and I think this is something that I've always, especially in this era of AI right now, a lot of the technical stuff, but people are not going to be, a lot of the code that is being written and stuff like that, AI will be writing a lot of that stuff. I think the problem solving is the part that is going to be most important for, I mean, I think it's not just for data folks, but just in general, I think. Mm-hmm. What is your suggestion for folks who are so much embedded in that technical coolness such that they can say, well, no, like, think about the problems. Like, what's your kind of encouragement for folks to kind of make that flip, make that switch?
I would say, and then this was part of my talk, actually, reach out to people who are doing the work, you know, reach out to them and see if, I mean, if that's possible. Of course, each organization is different. Like I said, small organizations, it's easier, big organizations, much harder to do. But if you can reach out directly to them and say, what exactly do you need to solve? And I know that sometimes the answer is not clear because, you know, we have that, oh, the business doesn't know what they want. I know that. I know all of that. But it goes back to, you know, trying to, all you can do is at least try to understand the world a little bit better and how to bring data to solve that.
What is your suggestion for folks who actually, for them to actually start doing that, to be able to go, like, how do I actually go off and find the people who are doing the work, and how do you engage them? Like, what do you ask them? Or like, is it literally, how do you do your work? Or I mean,
well, depends on the problem. Like I was actually very lucky because where I am, I had a business analyst who was in the company for a long time, and she helped me out a lot to understand workflows and how do I do things. So I would always, you know, ping her and, how do the nurse does this? I mean, I need to understand the workflow. Is there any documentation? Is there anything that I can follow? So I understand I was lucky to have that one person. And if you can have, I don't know, maybe a mentor, maybe it's your manager, maybe it's a mentor, maybe it's point me to that person where I can understand this problem deeper so I can make the data reflect to that. So, and I know, like I said, each organization is different. Maybe I got lucky to have that. But yeah, so I would find that one go-to person so you can understand, go back to understanding the problem first.
So we've talked a little bit about now kind of the conversations side of the human side of data and data analytics. I know one thing that you've thought a lot about and talked a lot about is shared definitions. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means for you and how that gets worked into the work that, that data people need to do?
Can you give me an example?
Well, I mean, when you start talking to people and you realize, wait, you're saying the same thing and you're doing different, but you're saying the same word, but you mean different things, or you're all doing different. And then you're the one who kind of starts realizing, oh, you're all doing this work differently and you're trying to accomplish the same thing, like, and trying to find an agreement.
Or you asked me for this kind of analysis, but then actually what you really meant was this, and you know, how do we get aligned on that, right?
Yeah, so how have you worked before, like trying to find these alignments?
Oh yeah, it has happened to me before that people are using different words for the same thing or vice versa. And yeah, for the sake of, because of course I can't just keep going back and checking over and over again because of time. I would love to, but you know, there's the time factor. Honestly, for me, I don't know if I'm doing this right or wrong. I pick one definition and I go with it. And when I explain analysis, I say, listen, I'm looking from this angle. This is what this analysis means. Is this what you want? Is this what, you know, does this make sense to everybody? And if there's a different definition, if they know that's not what we want, okay, let's go back to what do you want? So I can just tweak that one part. So I don't know. That's how it works.
A lot of these things, you kind of, they sound complicated, but when you really think about it, it's like, this is not that complicated. Just people sometimes just don't need to, they need to just go do it and try it themselves. And then think about the frameworks and tools they need. And
well, and I think there's a little bit like two schools of thought on this, where like one is more like what you just said, which is kind of like, well, let me pick what I mean when I say that, right? And then like, here's what I'm thinking makes sense. And that way you're coming in with a strong point of view, and then they can react to it, right? The other school of thought is like kind of the opposite, right? Which is like, oh, well, like, let me hear them say what they think it means. And then I'll be like, oh, interesting. That's interesting that you're explaining it that way. Like, so like this, and you know, and then kind of like trying to like extract the definition out of them. Like sometimes that's nice because you're being more like in a discovery mode, but also at the same time, sometimes people don't know what they're asking for.
If you can, the other thing that I do too, when I'm gathering those definitions and they start to explain, you know, I want, you know, X, Y, and Z, I tell them back. What okay, is this what you mean? Do you mean this and this and this? This is what you want? And you know, because that also shows that you are, you know, listening to them, and then they can think about if that is really what they mean or not. So repeat back.
Mirroring and reciprocating, right? It's like like, I heard you say this. Like, is that what you said? It's like,
That's the ideal, actually. That's the ideal thing to do. Like what I said before is like sake of time.
Be faster because you can get a quick reaction to things, right? But then this is a kind of another approach to get even further discovery, right?
Absolutely.
This is all this the pre-work. The pre-work that needs to happen before you actually do any of the technical data work, but arguably this pre-work is the most important and should probably take most of the time, because I think now the technical work will probably be automated very quickly. I mean, once you give your AI, your agents, all this well-defined stuff, then that technical work will get done, but it's just this human side is the most important. In your talk, or in the talk you give at the AI Texas, it was a lot about trust. What is trust for you? How do you define trust in this data world?
I think trust is something that builds over time. Like if you are consistently delivering that, you know, good quality work, you're consistently, not only good quality work, not only, I mean, that too, of course, but if you're consistently communicating and answering questions and, you know, answering what, not only delivering exactly what the business wants, but be that partner, build that rapport, that's trust. So that's when, you know, the stakeholders go back and like, oh, I'm going to give this analysis to Thais because you know what? She's going to address the problems. She's going to, you know, go back and forth with me. She's, you know, so that's trust and it's built over time. It's built over time and being no BS, like there's no BS. Don't make up stuff. If you don't know the answer, saying I don't know is 100% fine. So yeah, so that's building trust.
That's why I love this. Yeah. I don't know is a perfectly valid answer.
Yes. We don't have the data. We just don't have it, you know, so it's perfectly fine.
I also think that part of the trust is realizing when you're making an assumption and trying to make that assumption. And then you go back, it's like, wait, I don't know what it could be, this thing or that thing. So at that moment, you're like, well, I'm just going to go decide it's this definition. And then I implement it one way. When I think that's kind of where you need to stop and like, wait, I need to go back and talk to people and go figure it out, because then I can make an assumption and then generate some results that we're not going to, they think they're going to go trust, but then they realize they should get something that wasn't true. And I think that's one of the issues is the assumptions. How do you see people, like if that's a way to gain trust, your experience, how are teams or people losing trust? Like what are the things that are like people are doing without them even realizing that by doing that, you're losing trust? Like that's what you should stop doing.
Yeah, I think it's when you don't know the answer, you just make up an answer. That right away, that's, you're going to lose trust. Eventually is going to get caught. Eventually is going to get caught. You don't know something, you go. And I think with time, people that are more seasoned, they can tell when somebody's BSing, when somebody's just like winging it. It's, people can tell with time, the most experienced, you know, people. And just, you know, making up stuff or, you know, oh yes, I'm 100% sure this is what it means. And it's, yeah, you can lose trust. And if you don't ask any questions, if you like, oh, I know this, and you don't ask a question, you don't listen, all of this makes people lose trust. If you don't listen to other people telling you, yep.
Is there a particular role that you see that technology has to play in trust? Like how important is your view of trust? Does it rely on, we need, you know, a data quality tool, we need a glossary, we need a catalog, we need, you know, like are those things critical? Are they, you know, valuable, but like the most important thing is the people side? I'm curious about what's the role that you think technology plays?
Okay. I'm going to be honest here.
Honestly,
I don't know much about it to say the catalog is the answer. So, being honest here.
Yeah.
But yes, I think it's all going to depend on the use case, size of the company, use case scenarios, and all of this to see what is a better fit for each situation. But I don't have a specific tool to tell you, yes, catalogs are the answer, and this is the answer, because I honestly don't have the answer to that.
No, that's fair. And it sounds like in general, you're thinking it's much more use case driven. It's more fit for purpose.
I mean, when people, going back, if you're coming from that technical perspective, and you're talking about trust, and people are like, well, trust is you have to have high quality data, and then data needs to be accurate. And you go off to all of these very technical measures and they need these tools to go do it. But at the end of the day, trust is, what, to your point, Thais, is like, you're talking to the people and they're like, yeah, they believe you and they're coming back to you and you become a partner, a strategic partner for them. So, so I'm curious, like, what is your advice for folks who are like, who want to be able to be in that strategic position where people come to them and they're not there, right? What is, like, what should they start doing or stop doing to be able to become more a trusted person within the organization?
Well, I would say, like I said, listen to what the people are telling you. Listen to what the people are telling you. Empathy goes a long way, long, long way. Listen to what people are telling you. And it's interesting, like going back to dentistry, that was something that I picked when I was practicing as a dentist and a dental hygienist, because think about this, people don't like to be in the dental chair. People hate it, hate to be there. And, you know, and I had to really be like, okay, what are your fears? Why you don't like to be here? What, and, oh, it's going to hurt. It's going to do this. It's gonna, I don't like that suction in my mouth. I don't like, and then little by little gain their trust. And it's, if I say this to people in healthcare, if you can manage, you know, patients in healthcare, you can manage stakeholders. It's a breeze. That's a breeze.
I just had a vision in my head of like, you're like a data hygienist.
Yes, right.
And the business person, the business stakeholder is sitting in the chair and they're like, do I have a cavity? Are you going to be in my mouth right now? And you're like, no, just relax, just relax.
Yeah, lots of patience. Yeah, lots of patience. And yeah. Yep.
So one of the things that I wonder now is within people coming into this space, coming into the data world, it's how much should they actually kind of almost think about it? Like they should really be interning more from a business side before they actually start doing more of the data work. And I wonder how much, because what I'm realizing through this conversation with you is like, the true value gets, the trust gets generated faster, more impactful, because you truly understand the business. And when you start and you empathize with the people, you understand their workflows, right? Then their document and how they're doing that work. And we just feel like a lot of the technical or a lot of data people don't do that. And I'm like, how do we get people to start to like, do we need to have the, how do we embed data people, technical people into the day of the life of whoever's doing the work, and saying, go gain some empathy, or go learn what people are doing. And it, by the way, it should be done both ways, right?
I'm not saying, of course.
But I think,
of course,
I mean, if we had more of that, I mean, but we need more of these bridges. I don't know. I'm ranting now, but I'm just like, listen, if we could just get more people to saying, I mean, think about an organization. It's like you should actually buddy up with somebody else in different lines of business and go understand how they work. And it's both ways.
Yes, absolutely. I remember this one situation that I had to troubleshoot something, and I had somebody from the business side on the call with me, and I was sharing my screen, and I said, okay. And I said, don't get scared, because it was like a bunch of lines of code back, you know. I said, this is the back end of what you see. And I put in there, and I'm looking to see where the error was. And this, you know, my coworker, that she's completely in the business side, don't know anything about data. She looked at that code. She's like, I just have to say, I appreciate you so much, because I have no idea what this means. And all of this enables me to do my work. So, and I told her, and I appreciate you for telling me what your work is, so I can do this.
It's a give and take organization.
How
do we make this more easier with an organization? I mean, you think we talk about data literacy programs and stuff like, I mean, this is what we really need.
Yeah. I mean, you can try to teach people about data and things like that. And it's valuable to do that. And, you know, and in reverse, helping data people understand the business more. But the thought that's coming to my mind based on what you're talking about, Thais, is that like almost the most important thing is you need to lower the barriers. If there's any kind of a barrier between the data team and the teams that are doing work, you need to lower that barrier, and you need to let people work together.
Yeah, exactly.
So another thought is I had a question here about evaluation. Like, if you look at how we evaluate people, right? Or like we're in jobs and what they're doing, we're like, what are we looking into? Like, how do I know you're doing a great job, right? And I think I wonder then is, what are the things that we should be looking at for what makes a great data analyst and a great data engineer or data scientist? And so I'm curious to know what your thoughts is, like, if you had to add something or eliminate something about how teams are evaluated today, what would you add? What would you take away?
I think one of the things that comes to my mind, one of the signals is if people are using what you're building. So let's say if I build a dashboard, are people using this dashboard? Are they going to it? Are they, that means it's valuable to them. Or let's say that I build the most beautiful dashboard. I did my code is perfect and I built the most beautiful, gorgeous dashboard, but nobody's using that. That's a sign.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and also I think we want to be able to, going back to the trust, it's like, mm-hmm. I want to kind of measure, evaluate like how much trust has been built, has been generated mm-hmm. by teams, because at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you are going to generate that impactful dashboard people are going to use because mm-hmm. not just you did all the great technical work, is because there's trust built around people that you knew that you got the mm-hmm. you got the right correct requirements, and you're actually focusing the things that needs to be done mm-hmm. on the end. So I mean, I think yeah, that's a proxy, but I wonder, so at the end of the day, also the dashboard itself is not the end goal, right?
Somebody
is using that to make a decision that's going to make an impact on how they're doing their work, because mm-hmm. they need to do more with less on how they do their work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also we have the tendency to think about this, like, oh, I built a dashboard, check, done. But there's iterations, reality changing. There's, you always have to be iterating what were you doing. So.
All right. Well, look, going through Tim has our lightning round questions ready, and I'm going to kick them off. All right. Question number one. You started your technical analysis journey with SQL. If mm-hmm. someone were just getting started today in this new AI world we're in, would you recommend SQL to them too?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I would.
That's fair. It is a good way to learn. And it requires a little bit of technical experience, right? Mm-hmm. All right, second question. You mentioned that technical skills are important, but the domain knowledge is what really creates a big impact, right?
Mm-hmm.
AI is starting mm-hmm. to do more technical tasks like mm-hmm. code generation and things like that. So do you feel like for data analysts or data workers that are the technical skills becoming less important?
No, they are still important. You still need to know what AI produces if that's the answer you want. You still need to know that. Can't you just, run and that's it, and, whatever AI spits out, it is what it is. And for that, you need to know the fundamentals. Let's say if I read a SQL code that was generated by AI, I need to be able to point if that code actually is doing what I want to do. So if I don't know SQL and I just trust whatever AI is doing, I wouldn't do that.
No, that's fair.
So then the question is, next one is, are most data analysis problems more people problems or more technical problems?
Oh, it's people problems. All goes back to those humans.
Pesky humans. All right. Final lightning round question.
Mm-hmm.
The best entry-level hire for a data team, should they be a person who doesn't have data experience, but they have the domain experience?
It has to be somebody who is teachable.
Mm-hmm.
Teachable. Whatever it is, maybe somebody who is highly technical and is willing to learn the other side, or vice versa. Somebody who is very good and that has the domain knowledge, but is very eager to learn the technical side. It has to be somebody that is teachable, that is not, I just rely on the human side, or I just rely on the technical side.
I like that. I'm going to cheat a little bit here and ask you a quick follow-up question, which is that when you're looking at talent, or imagine you were somebody who's like applying to a role, how would you recommend they explain that, like, I'm teachable, or show that they're teachable? Mm-hmm. Is there something they can do? Like, I've learned all these things and I did it on my own. And I guess, like, how would, do you have any recommendations for folks who want to demonstrate their teachability?
Yeah, that's what I did. That's what I did. So I remember that during my interview, I didn't have as many technical skills, mm-hmm. for sure. I had some technical skills, but not a lot. I did have a portfolio, which helped a lot to show, okay, those are the problems I was trying to solve. This is the code. This is how I got to the end of the problem. That helped a lot. Some people they interview look at the portfolio, some don't. So that's a hit and miss. But I think the most important was during the interview, I said, listen, I pick those skills by myself because I wanted to learn. I was like waking up early every day to learn code, you know, to. So when you see that drive in somebody, you know, that's, I think that's what matters, have that drive.
That's great. Yeah, one of my favorite interview questions is to ask somebody like, tell me about something that you've taught yourself recently. And then you can say, and can you teach me a little bit about it too? Right. And then you learn a little bit like their ability to learn and to teach. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's a good question. Something that I learned recently. Oof, let me think about that.
It's an interview question right now. Let's
see how your answer is.
I hope there's a skill itself that I have to say. What I have been learning recently that I have been a lot of fun with it. I mean, I have to say, I did get like beaten by Python for a long time. So I would say that my Python skills are getting sharper. That's that's what I say, that it's getting better. It's getting better. And I'm loving like to do automating things that I was taking me forever. And now I'm, you know, just going do that with one click of a button and I have, boom, all my analysis done with Python. So I would say that that's not a new skill, but it's something that I'm learning, getting better.
No, that's great. That's great. I remember when I was trying to teach myself programming. So I'm not a programmer. One's a lot sharper than me in that department. But I remember trying to learn JavaScript and Python. Those were the two that I was trying to learn. And I found actually Python a lot more intuitive and kind of easier to learn. JavaScript's a little more picky. So.
Yeah, well.
I don't know anything about JavaScript, so I can't tell.
I learned to code in Lisp and in C++ and in Java.
The fundamentals.
The algorithms. All right. Takeaway time. Tim, take us away with takeaways.
All right. So many good takeaways today. We started off with just asking a little bit about your background, like Honest No BS. How did you get into data and your data pathway? And you mentioned that you were, you know, started as a dentist in Brazil. You were a dental hygienist when you came to the U.S., but you kind of got burnt out from the kind of the field. And when COVID hit, right, you wanted to try something different, something new. And you saw this kind of connection between, you know, in dentistry, there's all these fun problems that can be solved by process and by data. And when your friend offered, hey, you know, I work at this dental lab, would you like to help us with, even if it just starts with some data entry, right? That you wanted to be able to help and, you know, and make a little money, right? So I thought that was a great kind of like get your foot in the door. And then you really are, you know, took it in a very self-taught kind of way, which I think is great advice for anybody who's in a field who wants to grow, wants to excel, or wants to break into a new field. So you got to learn, you know, consume tutorials. You said you saw some folks in the field who had done similar things that they were saying, hey, you should learn SQL. So you started teaching yourself SQL. Select Star, you're like, wow, I've got the power in my hands. And eventually you were doing some analysis, seeing the signals and patterns, and then you shared what you were finding and what you were learning with the company. And they said, wow, we need more of this, right? And that kind of set you on your path where you've been doing data analysis. Eventually you joined a larger data team. Now you're in behavioral health and learning Python and so much more, right? So I think this is kind of a great example of breaking into data. And importantly, you coming out of dentistry meant that you had that domain knowledge. And I've seen this time and time again, those who are really excelling in the world of data are those who actually can bring a fusion of kind of domain understanding with these technical skills. And then also the sort of the people skills, right? We asked like, how much of your success do you feel like came from your understanding of the field? And you mentioned that, you know, the technical skills are important. So we don't want to dismiss the importance of that. You have to have the technical skills too, or else you're going to struggle to do the job, right? But subject matter expertise is really a big critical multiplier for success. You have to understand the problem so that you can move faster and help other people understand the problem so that they can move faster, right? Problem solvers are not just technical specialists. So you talked about how you have to always tie back to the business value. You have to not just get excited about the coolness of the tech, but actually kind of the coolness of the problems that you're trying to solve. How do you start? You need to connect to people that are doing the work, interact with them directly, and find somebody who can be kind of your mentor, right? Somebody who can help you to understand the workflow in the business. Maybe there's some documentation that they can connect you to, find where you can learn from. So lots of good tips there. Juan, what were your big
ideas? I like we talk about alignments, right? And like, how do you get alignment? Like you said, if you want a fast reaction, is it you can start with a definition, explain the angle of how you're looking at things and make sure they understand it, and then have them react to see if they understood or not. And I think one of the most important things there is always repeat back. Is this what you mean? Right. That's actually what you're listening and so forth. Talked a lot about trust, which I really love. Like, trust is something that builds over time. It's about consistently communicating about questions people have. You're building rapport. You don't make stuff up, because if you don't know the answer, I don't know is a perfectly valid answer. You need to be very honest and no BS around things, because you lose the trust when you actually start making things up, and people will actually know that. People will realize that. Listen to other people who are telling you, because this is where empathy comes in. Empathy goes a long way. And I love your analogy is, like, as a dental hygienist, you have to understand your customer, your client, like, make them feel comfortable, right? Create an environment of trust. So in a way, you're kind of like you have to be a data hygienist here. And we talked about, like, how should, like, teams be evaluated? To know how you know you're doing a good job is, like, if they're producing things that are actually being used, they're actually being are valuable by the rest of the organization. Like, that's one of the most important things. That's a proxy to know that, okay, you did build that trust and so forth. What do we do? Anything we missed?
That's it. You guys are perfect.
Well, that was you. So thank you very much. Let's wrap up three questions. What's your advice? Who should we invite next? And what resources do you follow?
Let me see. What was the first question again? Sorry.
What's your advice about data, about life, whatever you want?
It could be anything.
Advice. Well, if I'm going to stay in the data realm, focus on the problem you're trying to solve. Same thing that I have said for the podcast, focus on the problem you're trying to solve. Try to look for simplicity too. Sometimes you don't need a crazy complex solution. Try to make it simple. Don't look for complexity. It's going to find you. It will. So
complexity will find you. You don't need to seek it.
That's a t-shirt quote right there.
Yes.
Complexity will find you. Don't seek it.
Yes.
Who should we invite next?
Honestly, now that I think about, I have on Data Day Texas, I watched Dylan Anderson. His talk was amazing about the data ecosystem. It was one of my favorite talks. I would invite him.
All right. Awesome. Yeah. And then what resources do you follow? Certain communities or blogs or podcasts or whatever that you find most valuable?
Oh, geez. I have been finding a ton of resources on Substack. For me, has become my favorite platform now. Just looking
at the community is kind of blown up on Substack.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm loving that too. I love that Substack has the short format, but it also has the long format. So if you want to sit and read through a newsletter you have, if you just want to scroll down on the notes, you have that too. So absolutely love that. I wish their video was a little better. Their videos are a little iffy, but overall, it's really great platform.
That's true. Like, so I'm also posting a little bit more on Substack, so it's great to see a lot of community there. Mm-hmm. Well, Thais, thank you so much. Really appreciate how you were very open and you shared your story. And I think there's a lot of people listening who will definitely find themselves connected with you. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that. And cheers. Looking forward to seeing you at the next event.
Me and my water.
Cheers. Cheers.
Yes.